Hello, my name is Mary Mogan Edwards. I'm an editorial writer for the Columbus Dispatch, and we're speaking today with James Ragland. He is serving on the Columbus Board of Education, and he is running unopposed to remain in that seat for the 2 years that remain in the term. Thank you for coming in to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It seems that in your short time on the board, you have made some waves in just in siding with Eric Brown on a couple of disagreements with other board members that had to do with travel. There was concern over board members who were going to leave the board very soon, traveling to a conference I think that they'd been to before. And anyway, watchers of the board know that there've kind of been some factions on the board, and I just wonder what your thoughts are about that. Was this issue just isolated for you, or do you feel that a different voice is needed?
Well, I think the particular issue on travel in the fall was an isolated issue. For me, going into the discussion around travel, we had an outside entity that was prepared to pay for our travel to the Harvard Business School. They weren't able to do that at the last minute, and therefore we had to make a change. That meant that the Harvard Business School trip that included every single board member as well as the superintendent became the priority, and anything else needed to be put in the background. So therefore, I kind of made the deduction that Miami would be off the list, and my colleagues, if they chose to go to Miami, should not ask the taxpayers to do both of those trips, but they should go about the business of doing some fundraising and make it so that, you know, another entity would pay for their trip to Miami. And that was just essentially the case. I do feel like professional development is paramount to the success, especially of this board. However, I don't think the burden of all of the professional development should fall to the taxpayer. And so I prioritize the Harvard Business School trip over the trip to Miami. And hopefully my colleagues will either find another way to pay for that trip so that it's not on the taxpayers to do so. But we lost the vote, so time moves on.
What do you mean when you say especially this board, especially for this board, professional development is paramount?
I think over the recent years, this board has demonstrated some bad behaviors, I believe, some internal disagreements that have gone before the public in a way that is not representative of a governmental entity in Central Ohio or anywhere. And so correcting some of those issues, I think the board needs some support in doing so. There's a way that you can disagree without being disagreeable. There's a way that you can go about expressing your opinion without, demonizing or tearing down another of your colleagues. And, you know, for me, I'd like to start my tenure on the board and be inclusive of some of the new members that will be coming on by making sure that we're setting about the business of operating in a manner that is, you know, a good example for the young people that we represent. And so moving away from some of the backbiting that you've seen in the past that has really caused a lot of mistrust within the community of the Board of Education is, you know, really what I feel is essential for the success of our students moving forward.
Now, am I right that you have served in city government as a legislative aide or
yes,
somewhere along the line, and you ran for mayor at one point, and
yes,
you also have had a good bit of work in charter schools here in Columbus. Can you talk a little bit about what has led you through city government and from charter schools to the public schools?
Absolutely. So I came out of college in 2002. I started off as a teacher at Millennium Community School, which is a charter school on the east side. I taught there for several years, and then I moved into an administrative position with WCCUBE schools that was on the north side. And that gave me a lot of experience. I got to manage a staff of around 50 people and really gave me some experience in working with parents and working with curriculum, working with teachers, and working with students.
I'm sorry, what was that second position?
WCCUBE, community schools that mm-hmm. was on the north side. And in fact, when
and I, what was your position with
I was
them?
An administrator there.
Okay.
And when we got the school, it was an F-rated school at the time. And by the time I joined Columbus City Council in 2007, we were a C-rated school. And so was pleased with some of the success that we found in educating young people in a very difficult neighborhood in Rosewind. I did join the staff of then council member Charlita Tavares in 2007. And that was a very interesting experience. Just taught me a lot about large-scale budgets, the bureaucracy of government. Got a chance to really interact on a person-to-person level, grassroots level with the public. Taught me a lot on how to solve public problems. When the public would call in, you know, I was able to navigate the system of the city of Columbus to get those problems solved, and I really did enjoy that experience. Following that, I joined the University District Organization at The Ohio State University as its executive director. We did that for a year, and that was actually the first year that I literally ran for office. I was a write-in candidate. We're talking about write-ins today. I was a write-in candidate for a seat in 2011 that Gary Baker eventually won. But what that led me to was an opportunity to work with Cristo Rey Columbus. On the campaign trail, someone from Cristo Rey saw me at a debate and talked to me about my platform, which at the time represented our young people going up through the Columbus City school system, graduating, and having the ability to go to college or get a good job and turn it into a career. Well, Cristo Rey essentially has been doing that all over the country, and so I was one of the first employees hired at Cristo Rey Columbus at the time. We were operating out of the basement of the Catholic Diocese, and over the next several years, we went about the business of working with this local community who really embraced the platform of that program to get into the building where we are right now with Cristo Rey on Town Street, right next door to the Columbus Metropolitan Library main branch. Worked in close partnership with Mr. Lisinski and that library to really do some tremendous things in developing that school with no library inside the school because they're using the main branch library on a day-to-day basis.
You hardly need one.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. We have one of the best libraries in the country right next to us. And so I think that helps me round out my experience in education and bring a different perspective to the Columbus City Schools Board of Education. If you think about the school choice movement in Ohio, it's not going to go away. And so how are we as a large-scale district, the largest district in the state, going to work with our school choice partners in this educational ecosystem to make sure that every child that lives within the Central Ohio area has the highest quality educational experience possible? And I am all about the business of moving forward with that.
What do you think you've learned or observed at Cristo Rey that can help as an administrator, as an overseer of Columbus schools?
The relentless pursuit of academic excellence with no excuses. For me, at Cristo Rey, we take young people who are coming from the same neighborhoods that the majority of the Columbus City School students are coming from, and we surround them with opportunities that allow them to expand their network, expand their resources, and then we give them the opportunity to do everything in their power to learn more and be a productive member of society. It's a very difficult situation. We're upfront with them about the fact that it's difficult, but we give them the tools and resources that are needed to be successful academically. I believe that the Columbus City Schools can do the exact same thing. Now, Cristo Rey is just a high school, but we've got a K-12 system, pre-K through 12 system in the city of Columbus, where we can instill some of those exact same values from pre-K all the way up through graduation. And so I've seen it done on a micro level. The community partnerships are absolutely essential to the success of Cristo Rey, and the community partnerships are absolutely essential to the success of Columbus City Schools. this community has embraced academic excellence in one area, and I think that they will embrace academic excellence across the board. So my role with the Columbus City Schools Board of Education is to do the exact same thing, but on a macro level.
This is Alyssa Widman-Neese, the education reporter for the Dispatch. Sort of along lines of what you were talking about, I know this past week, Superintendent Talisa Dixon shared her guiding principles and strategic priorities for the upcoming school year. Those four strategic goals were academic performance, culture and climate, talent management, and accountability and engagement. I was wondering if any of those goals in particular are of utmost importance to you, and if you had any tangible examples of how you as a board member could help the district achieve those goals.
Certainly. Academic excellence is the number one priority for all 50,000 students here in the city of Columbus. What I would like to see is a more efficient use of financial resources that we have at our disposal to make certain that every student gets a quality education no matter what school they go to. And so working through the district, making sure that we're using the finances efficiently so that when we spread the money out and there's equity across the district, you're not getting a lesser education at Columbus East than you are at Centennial. We need to make sure that East and some of the other schools that aren't performing as well as some of our other neighborhood schools can raise the bar and raise the standard. And so I applaud Dr. Dixon for what she has done thus far. Another part of that I think is very important is a recommitment to customer service. Over the years, I've heard a lot from the public about the fact that we have not been very responsive to them as a district to their needs. And I believe that Dr. Dixon has articulated a dogged pursuit of making sure that we are reconnecting with the public, making sure that we are serving their needs efficiently and adequately. And so I think that's going to be an area that I will maintain some focus on as well.
Did you know Dr. Dixon in her previous time with the school district?
No, ma'am. So what was very interesting, Dr. Dixon was appointed about a month. She was, given the job about a month before I was appointed to the board. My first week as a board member, I traveled to Cleveland Heights and met with her. We sat down in her office in Cleveland Heights. I met a few members of her staff and talked with her about her priorities and about what I would like to do here as a board member. And it was interesting, at the time, she had not just her to-do list with Cleveland Heights along the walls of her office, but also her strategic priorities for Columbus City Schools as well. And we had a very good conversation about how I could be complimentary to her through, not just that short period of time where she was working part-time, but then once she got on board here in March of 2019. And so my first time literally meeting her was at her community engagement forum at Independence High School before she was hired. But I thought it was important for me to travel and meet her and see her in her environment as soon as I was appointed to the board. And I think we've developed a strong working relationship since then.
This is Mary Yost. I'm the editorial page editor for the Dispatch. So at one point you had been a write-in candidate. You've had some great experience with charter schools, with Christo Rey, on staff, teaching. And now you've had the opportunity to serve most of a year in an appointed position on the school board. How has your experience so far compared to what your expectation might have been? And at what point were you certain that this was something that you wanted to pursue with voters at the ballot?
Well, I think, obviously my first foray into this was in 2011. And I knew then, at the time, I had two students in the district. My son was I believe he was in middle school back then. My math is a little blurry, but he is now a junior in college at Central State University. But he is a Walnut Ridge High School graduate and a very proud Scot. right now, my daughter is in 12th grade at Columbus Eastmore. And so having both of my children raised in Columbus City Schools, I've seen the best and the worst that this district has to offer. I've always felt like God was leading me towards an opportunity to serve in the public. And quite frankly, the priorities and the needs to serve in the public didn't change because I lost an election. You know, I lost in 2011, but the door was open for Christo Rey. God was in that. And it's apparent because of what we were able to do with the development of that school. You know, I lost the race for mayor, but that did not mean that my needs and my desires to see Columbus to be the best city in this country changed. It didn't. It just shifted a little bit. And so having two children in the district, being a PTA president at Columbus Walnut Ridge, all of my experiences across the board have kind of led me to this place where I think, you know, right now where there's crisis, there's an opportunity. And we were an F-rated district a little bit back, but now that's now changed. And, you know, when you see that there are issues that you can address with your talent and your responsibility, sometimes you've got to take the bull by the horns and literally go for it. So the opportunity presented itself. I jumped into it through a lot of prayer, and so far, so good is what I would say. You'll never be able to learn everything in, you know, the 9 months that I've been on the board about, you know, this school district. It's a behemoth. And so I'm still learning on a day-to-day basis. I learn and find out something new. But we've got great people working for Columbus City Schools. We have awesome, awesome families that have entrusted us with the education of their most precious resource. And so I get up every day looking forward to the work that's ahead of me.
That's great. What kind of strategies serve you in learning every day? How do you go about that business of learning?
Well, never go in with a preconceived expectation. Number one, you've got to have an open mind when you're dealing with 50,000 students, a couple thousand employees, a $1.5 billion budget. You have to be open to listening and learning before speaking. And so for me, when I meet with, you know, employees of the district, I do a lot of listening and making sure that I'm either taking mental notes or literal notes so that I hear directly where they're coming from, and use a lot of my talents to try and help solve some of the issues that they may be presenting to me. As a parent, I think it's important for me to show empathy to other parents. I've had that bad customer service experience with the district. And so when parents come to me and they say, hey, listen, we've called and I've talked with the principal, I've talked with the teacher, nothing can be done about this situation. Can you help me? Showing empathy, you know, and letting them know that I understand where they're coming from and I've been there. I'm hoping that that helps to instill some trust back from our families into the district. And so I go in with an open mind and an open heart. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, having an attentive ear to what it is that folks are saying to me. And then, you know, hopefully I can use my time and my talents to help solve a lot of these problems that exist.
Are you visiting schools then? How do you have those engagements interactions?
Absolutely. And I have yet to be in all 109 schools within the district, but I am very aggressively pursuing that. I'm trying to get to every single school that I can. I have held some community conversations in schools and some real conversations with some folks, and I hope to do a lot more of that. Obviously, our website is up and running, and parents email us all the time and ask questions about what's going on with the district. And then, you know, as a school board member, folks know who you are. And so you can't walk through the grocery store without someone coming up to you and the kid gives you a hug and the mom says, hey, listen, what are you going to do about making sure my child has better lunches this school year? Or what are you going to do about making sure that, you know, Columbus Eastmore gets some air conditioning? You see, as you go through the city and you see and you interact with people who are engaged with our schools, either by, you know, their knowledge of the schools as a parent or a student, or, Now you've got nieces and nephews and grandchildren that attend Columbus City Schools, and they hold those issues close to their heart. So there's still a lot of pride for Columbus City Schools. There's a lot of graduates who are here that believe in what we're doing. And so I'm hoping to engage a lot of our graduates as well and help them, help us be a part of this renaissance that is Columbus City Schools right now.
You mentioned the school district had been F-rated by the state. We've learned that it's moved up the ranks a little bit. It's at the D level now. Was that surprising to you, or do you have some thoughts on what caused that movement in the right direction?
Certainly. It was not a surprise. Kudos to those employees and families and teachers especially that have done the work to get us to this point. When I first got onto the board, we had just implemented our Saturday Super Readers program. Dr. John Stanford deserves a tip of the hat for making sure that our grade moved out of the academic distress level into a D. And we're not celebrating that. God forbid I brought a D into my parents' house. It was not anything to celebrate, right? But, Dr. John Stanford and Alicia Gillison, who at the time was the chief academic officer, implemented a strategy that would help with literacy specifically, to the point where we were transporting students and their parents to the schools on Saturdays throughout the winter and into the early spring to help with, just a heavy, heavy dose of literacy. And a lot of the programs that those people implemented, made sure that we were going to get out of academic distress. Also, Dr. Dixon came on board in January and really reaffirmed our commitment to working with our English language learners. And Dr. Sain, who is leading that department within the district, did a fantastic job of working with our ELL students and all of those teachers around the district that have, put in extra work with our large new Americans who are a part of our school district. I think those are the things that have really propelled us forward. Also, Dr. Michelle Klein and her commitment to our graduation rates and some of the things that we have been seeing over the years that have literally improved the district's graduation rate. All of those folks have done just a yeoman's work in getting us to where we are. So we weren't necessarily surprised. We are not finished. We are committed to making sure that we are an A-rated district, and so we are not going to take a breath. When you find success, it's time to work even harder. And so we've got a little bit of success in moving out of our F rating into a D. Our goal is to get us to an A, and Columbus deserves that.
And we certainly appreciate anything you can do to create future generations of readers.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
You had mentioned that as a parent, you've seen the best and the worst the district has to offer. And when we were talking about the strategic goals, you also mentioned the importance of equity throughout the district's 109 schools. I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about whether you think the district has issues with equity right now and in what ways.
Well, certainly we do. And a part of that is natural, I think. We've got schools where their neighborhood schools are absolutely fantastic. If you look at the northwest quadrant of Columbus and those schools that are operating in the Clintonville area, Bethel Road area, your Centennials and your Whetstones and your Clinton Elementaries and all of those that are in some of our high quality neighborhoods within the city, you'll see just neighborhood schools that are operating far better than some of the schools in some of our more challenging neighborhoods throughout the city. How do we address that as a school district? I've got booster clubs that can raise thousands of dollars over a weekend, and then I've got schools that don't have booster clubs at all. And so what can we do from the board's perspective to go out to the community and say, hey, listen, resources look differently in Clintonville than they do on the Near East Side, or they look differently in the South Side than they do on the Hilltop? What can we do to go about making sure that every student gets what they need? We've got Dr. Dixon, who's already articulated that she's going to hire a chief equity officer that will really take an inventory of what we have and then come back to us with a plan that we feel that we can implement to make sure that no student is left without the resources they need to be successful. Naturally, you know, if I'm a student at Centennial, I probably have a booster club for the math club, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got parents who can, you know, support everything that it is that we are doing. How can I get my students at Walnut Ridge to have the exact same thing? There's a way that it can be done, but sometimes you've got to be creative with who you're asking and how. And so that's what I'm pretty good at. We're going to take an inventory of where we are on the equity piece, and then we're going to go about the business of making sure that it happens.
When you talk about that equity piece and the difference in resources and trying to get more for the schools that have less right now, are you thinking of resources from some other source besides parents, or are you thinking of building capacity among the parents themselves?
It's a both. The parents can build capacity. I'm a PTA, you know, president, former PTA president. And, you know, sometimes you've got to show parents what they can do to be a part of it. It's an educational prospect for us as well. We would have PTA meetings in the middle of JV and varsity basketball games at Walnut Ridge. And so sometimes you've got to think differently and creatively about how you engage those parents. And we've made a commitment to that, but also community partners. So one of the other things that Dr. Dixon has done is she has given us a chief of partnerships. Essentially, Mrs. Gillison, who was our former chief academic officer, is now going to be engaged at the cabinet level in coordinating partnerships throughout the city. And so one thing that I've learned is that we have some tremendous, tremendous partners in education throughout the city. And you've got to know and understand that our partners want to be a robust part of what it is that we're doing. I think reestablishing trust between the school board itself and those partners within the community is paramount to our success. And then being creative and putting those partners at the table with us as we plan is something that we've got to do. I think in the past, we've done a lot of trying to develop internally what we think our partnerships should look like, and then going out to the partners and asking them to kind of fit themselves into our plan. I think a better approach would be to bring the partners to the table right now and plan together. What is your capacity to do some things? What would you like to do? What does success look like for you? And then how is that aligned to academic achievement for our students? And I think that is the role of Ms. Gillison. I think she's perfect for that position. And I tip my hat to Dr. Dixon for thinking of it in that way. But I think we can make it happen. It's both.
Hi, this is Alan Miller, editor of the Dispatch. A couple questions for you. One, we just saw contract negotiations with the teachers union, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about how the negotiations went and then the results. And then second question relates to the, in some ways, to the equity issue that we just discussed, and that is school financing. We've met with city council candidates, and we asked them all about tax abatements for development in Columbus and heard their thoughts on that. But tax abatements have an impact on the schools and their budgets. And so if you could speak to that as well, sure. I'd appreciate it.
Both of those. I am extremely pleased with the way our negotiations came out. We have a teacher contract. Our teachers are excited about their contract. They're excited about the momentum that's been created with new leadership from the superintendent's office and the potential for new leadership for this board. And so, like I said, it's a renaissance for Columbus City Schools right now. We were pleased with the way that those contract negotiations ended up. And I think we've got a fair contract for our teachers. I think it's something that they can definitely work in and continue to work as hard as they have been working. And I think they see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so they're excited. The convocation was a great event where a lot of energy, a lot of positive energy was taking place. And I'm excited for our teachers and the job that they have before them. Regarding the tax abatement issue, I think a little differently. You know, with tax abatements, I think they're a necessary tool. I would like to see tax abatements in some of the more challenging areas in the city. And I am also committed to making sure that the jobs that are created through our tax abatements are going to residents of Columbus. I think the balance with the tax abatements that we have, if you've got an abatement and it's a pretty large abatement and you're creating 50 jobs, I'd like to see all 50 of those jobs go to literal residents of Columbus. What it does for me is it helps that my parents of Columbus City School children are being hired in these living wage jobs. We're looking for upward mobility for our students and their families. I know that if we're abating taxes and you're giving out jobs of, you know, $75,000, $80,000 a year, and they're going to a potential parent of a Columbus City School student, the likelihood of that child having quality housing, quality health care, good meals to eat, living in neighborhoods where they're not experiencing post-traumatic stress, walking to and from our bus stops, all of that is very high. And so my conversations with some of our council members center on sourcing those jobs to residents of the city. And I think that you'll start to see a lot more acceptance of the abatements if we start articulating what they really mean, really give a strong narrative about, you know, hey, there's some properties that, you know, aren't generating any resources for the district at all. And once those properties are redeveloped, the district gets X amount of resources. I think we should do a better job of saying precisely what those things are. But, you know, you get those jobs to residents who live right here within the city. And I think you'll start to see the conversation change on abatements overall.
Can you talk at all about how that issue was handled in the contract talks now that they're over? Because it did not end up, you know, getting reflected in the contract, if I'm right.
Well, from our end, as a board member, my role in that was working with our council members and speaking with them about what I would desire regarding the tax abatements that they're going to approve or not approve in the future. We've got a very limited number of tax abatements. I think the threshold is 75% over a number of years. And so we're going to see a couple of those. For our part, I think that we're doing a better job than we have been in the past from the board's perspective and making sure that before an abatement gets to the board, that they have run this abatement through our academic departments as well as our treasurer. So that by the time it gets to the board level and we're asked to at least look at something, that the incentives that are involved with that abatement are something that is reflective of a positive, a win for our young people. It wasn't necessarily a part of the negotiation from, you know, from my perspective. I know the teachers really kind of stood out and argued that they had a couple of protests at city council and things of that nature. But that was not something that we were addressing heavily throughout the negotiation process. I think our focus was on academic achievement for young people and making sure that the quality of life in the classroom for our teachers was improving and that we had a really good means of holding them accountable for the job that they're supposed to be doing. I don't remember a lot of discussion at all about tax abatements through that negotiation process.
Can you reflect at all on the fact that a couple of long-term board members are leaving, Gary Baker and Shauna Gibbs, and I don't remember if anyone else is leaving, but do you have any thoughts on what that can mean, what kind of change that might bring?
Certainly. And we're losing a lot of historical knowledge with President Baker and W. Shauna Gibbs leaving the board. I think that they should be commended for the number of years of service that they've had over the district. They've seen the district through a lot of tumult. I mean, several superintendents, a data scandal statewide investigation that, you know, led to some things that were not necessarily positive, but now starting to see some breakthroughs in some of the educational issues that they've tried to overcome. And so, you know, thanks to them for their years of dedicated service. It's a huge sacrifice to serve on a board of education for, you know, 12 years. And both of them have done that for at least that amount of time. And so, you know, kudos to them for the job that they have done. But I also believe that it represents a new day for the district. And any time that you have folks that, you know, there's turnover, it really gives you a new opportunity. That is why I'm supportive of our team of candidates for the Columbus City School Board, myself and Mr. Brown, as well as Ms. Adair, Carol Beckerly, who is a former teacher, who I'm sure all of you will find to be very refreshing, and Dr. Tina Pierce, who's just a terrific educator. I think we're going to bring a new perspective, a lot of maturity and responsibility to the board. And so decorum is something that is at the forefront of our dealings. We make sure that, you know, we can disagree without being disagreeable. And I think what it's going to turn into is a more positive example. And like I said, I would like to reclaim the trust of this public in the Columbus City Schools. And so you've got an opportunity to move forward with positive momentum, with our new teachers and their new contract, our new superintendent, a brand new board, and hopefully a new public relationship. I think the sky's the limit for Columbus City Schools.
So the district owns a public radio station, WCBE, that has gone through some financial turmoil recently. And I know within the past few months, the school board has agreed to cover the costs through district funds for the next year for the operations of the radio station. And then after that, is sort of reimagining what that radio station's role should be. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on what you think the radio station should be for district students.
You're shaking your head.
Oh, yes, I am. Listen, you've hit on a really good sweet spot for me. I am a graduate of Fort Hays High School. And right now, the interim director of WCBE is my high school principal, Dr. Jerry McAfee. We have spent, you know, pretty much all of my years in high school and since then just imagining what we could do with Fort Hays and our radio and our TV program. And to see Dr. McAfee in that position right now really does my heart good. I have asked specifically to be a part of the reimagining of WCBE moving forward, even if it means that there's a change, you know, in leadership. I think that there are things that we could be doing as a district to make that radio station more viable. If you think about it, we've got an attentive audience in radio for 6 hours of the day. Over 40,000 of our 50,000 students ride the bus to and from school. And from, say, 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock, we've got students on our buses. Why are we not using our radio station to do academic content area along with some music that our students could be DJing, and then our teachers could be giving us academic short lesson plans that students could be listening to and from their homes to our schools? So essentially, my daughter would get on the bus at 6:30 in the morning. Why can't we have academic content area in some of our areas that our students would be tested on? Short vignettes of lessons that would be taught by some of our finest teachers that could broadcast over the radio. And in between that time, have students on just like any other DJ that you would hear in the morning, spinning the records that our young people would listen to. I think it's a creative way to repurpose that radio station and put a bit more programming that is student-centered. Also, I think that there's a space for us to utilize our arts departments within the district as well as our athletics departments within the district. We should be broadcasting our high school football games and basketball games and track meets and all of these other things that any other radio station would be broadcasting throughout the city. Who would not listen to Game of the Week featuring Mifflin versus Beechcroft in football, and it's being called by some of our students who are radio and TV students for the vocational program at Fort Hays? That is training for our young people. That is also something that we could be, you know, going out and sending our young people out into those games so that they're actually taping the games and interviewing players throughout the week, and, you know, player of the week and MVP type atmospheres. There are things that we can do when we have this broadcast center And I just think that we've kind of undersold ourselves by, you know, just let's just put NPR on there and then we're duplicating a lot of the things that are happening at WOSU. If we're going to own and operate a station, then it should be for the kids and about the kids. And we should use that as an opportunity. We should be, you know, committed to producing the finest radio announcers and, you know, developers in the state. And I think that we can do that. And so reimagining what we have over this next year is going to be paramount, you know. And I'm glad that Dr. McAfee is in this interim position. Once we get up and rolling about what we're going to do, I've got all types of ideas that are as old as me being in, you know, 9th and 10th grade saying, hey, we have a radio station at our school that I just want to bring to the table. And hopefully we can use those as development opportunities for our young people. Thank you so much for asking me about
that. No problem. I'm glad to hear you're so excited about it.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
And you mentioned possible vocational programming, so I assume there could be some funding sources for that at the state level then.
Well, I would imagine the state and our governor has recommitted to workforce development, and I feel, you know, Columbus City Schools is the biggest workforce development arm in the state. We've got 50,000 students, each of whom we are pursuing, you know, a relentless pursuit for academic excellence so that they can graduate and either join the workforce or go to college and turn themselves into productive members of society through a career. One of the things that I really want to focus on is specialization within the schools that we currently have. We mentioned the equity piece across the board, and the one thing that I would like to see is making sure that our neighborhood schools that are currently underperforming are competitive with some of our other schools throughout the city. So if you look at it, we've got this system where, you know, our alternative schools have wait lists, you know, in the thousands. And we need to be making sure that our neighborhood schools are highly specialized so that they can, you know, get some more students to want to come to those schools by choice. If you think of workforce development and certification, why aren't we intensifying our vocational programs at schools specifically? So if you want a retail supply chain type of certification that would allow you to work in retail and supply chain, why aren't we working with a partner like Limited Brands, who's one of the finest retailers on the planet, in a school like Mifflin, where you could say, you know, over 4 years, you would learn a lot about retail and supply chain, some of the things that our partners do well, and then have a certification upon graduation for every single student that went to that school. If you do something like that, that would allow for folks that are coming from neighborhoods that are quality and have quality schools to choose some schools in other neighborhoods. And that may allow us to kind of even the playing field and get more students in schools that are currently underserved. I'd love to have a logistics program at a school like Marion Franklin in partnership with our folks down at Rickenbacker and all of the things that they've got going on there. If we can make some robust partnerships and get certification for our young people by specializing some of the schools that don't necessarily have a lot of the quality program that we see in other areas, I think we can accomplish that goal.
Well, thank you so much for coming and spending some time with us today. We don't imagine you're too worried about this election, but we're glad for the voters to get to know a little bit more about you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. You know, I've always loved reading your paper. My parents have been subscribers my entire life, and I'm a subscriber now. And so I just really appreciate the way that you all have been covering us, especially as of late. I think that Dr. Dixon is a star, and we're hoping to make sure that she surrounds with every resource that she needs to move this district forward. Continue to think positively about Columbus City Schools. We are on the rebound. It is a renaissance, and I'm excited about our future, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you.